cliffcentral.com.
All right, today we are chatting with Garth Mill from the Wannabe a Champion Academy. Now, that is quite a name for a place. It doesn't mess around. You go there because you want to become very, very good, and it's wanting to become very, very good at golf. Now, a few weeks back, I think if you're listening to the Gareth Cliff Show in the morning, you may have heard me say that I want to get my life together and become a really good golfer. What that entails is obviously a lot of time, a lot of effort, but it's going to take a lot of sort of expertise, more technical things, I'm sure, about the golf game, because it's a very intricate game, this thing of golf, and that is why I love it so much. You know, you can have a good day, you can have a bad day, and I'm sure you can agree with me, if you have played golf before or you do play golf currently, you never know which one's going to be. But when you know people like Garth and you work with people like Garth, who is an expert in the field, you can kind of take a lot of these variables out and, of course, become better. So this is what the pros go to him for, and also how guys like I go to him for, to get better at the game of golf. Garth, thanks so much for joining me today.
That's only a pleasure, man.
It's, as you can see, that intro was totally unrehearsed. I've wanted to chat to you. I met you originally through Serengeti Golf Club. I think the first time we really chatted was around the SA Open back then. And I was quite interested in what you do. You seem to always be around professionals. People always seem to pay attention when you spoke. And then obviously I've been onto your website and I found a bit more about what you do. I recently saw you at the Johannesburg Open, which is one of the European co-sanctioned tour events. And of course, you do work with professionals. Just sort of starting out, what was your background in golf? How did you get involved in this amazing game that we both love?
Well, it started in my postgraduate study years, actually, when I was at Rhodes University for my sins. But I was always going to go into cricket. I was a good cricketer growing up, and cricket conditioning was certainly the road that was laid before me. But in 97, 98, a young kid by the name of Tiger Woods appeared on the scene, and suddenly I realized that I could actually make my passion my occupation, which was golf. Oh, right. I've always been a passionate golfer. Played sort of university's level golf, but never really had any desire to turn professional. I think I just knew that my skill set wasn't really going to be that good. But I kind of realized that I could really sort of gel both the health and wellness and fitness side of things, which is what I was studying, with golf. And this the whole new world opened up to me.
Now, back then, of course, it's great that you mentioned Tiger, because it definitely speeds this conversation along a bit. Mm. Before Tiger, it was play around, have a pint. You know, if you look back at some of the real beauts of golf, like Ian Woosnam back in those days, golf changed a whole bunch when Tiger came onto the scene. When you said, you know, your passion can now become your occupation, was it still a very new thing, industry-wise, here in South Africa in particular, that people were looking more about the health, the fitness, the technical side of things back, was it sort of like late 90s?
Yeah, late 90s, yeah. Ben, I mean, in actual fact, it was a very new thing globally. To do my postgraduate thesis study, you know, you obviously have to look through journals and get, you know, peer-reviewed studies that you can validate what my research was about. And there was nothing on golf. Anything on golf injuries or anything related to that was about, you know, club hits head, you know, ball against knee, that type of thing. So there was no study in overuse or anything like that. And I actually, funny enough, had to source a lot of baseball research. And I kind of did a bit of a correlation between the movement mechanics of swinging a baseball bat to swinging a golf club. And there are a lot of similarities in the two. So that's really where I had to source my information from back then. But yeah, like you said, Tiger really changed the way that professional golf is viewed. As an athlete, rather than just exactly like you say, a beer swigging, strange pant, funny pants wearing man, seeking professional advice out there. So, I mean, Tiger, there's a lovely story about Tiger. Actually, he played an event in one of his first events in La Costa in California. Mm-hmm. And the gym is on one side of the clubhouse, and the main bar is in the center. And he purposely walked through the center of the bar with a, you know, drenched in sweat with the towel around his shoulders, and walked past all his contemporaries who've been on the tour for many years, and just, you know, casually gave a little "what's up, guys" as he walked through after his workout while they were sitting around having a pint after their round. And I think a lot of them realized that you know, the dawn of a new age had arrived.
Definitely, he did ruin the bar, and he really did. I think, but didn't Greg Norman, he was one of the more original guys. Because I actually remember chatting to Ian Woosnam about this exact thing. Mm. Like, who changed it? Who changed it from the beer to the practice green? Because a lot of guys, there's been a lot of time practicing afterwards.
Mm. For sure. Yeah, I think, I mean, Greg definitely was one of those who was he was cognizant of his physical conditioning and actually doing some stuff in the gym. Obviously, we can all go back to Gary. I mean, Gary's known as the grandfather of golf fitness. Although, you know, a lot of the stuff that he does, even to this day, I certainly do not do with my athletes, because I'm about about building a golfing athlete, not just a bodybuilder.
So how did you then get started officially in this industry? Because it must have been quite a bit of a tough sell to some people to go and spread the net sort of focus-wise. So did you start off just one-on-one, or did you start working at a club itself? How did it become to the stage where you are now?
Yeah, Ben, I actually started in a tennis center, funny enough, in London. I was living in the UK and working there. I managed to convert one of the tennis courts up at the top in the back corner, and I had a little sort of inflatable net, and mm-hmm. that's where it all started there. And then I'd go around to golf clubs and had to get the golf coaches buy-in to actually send their students to me. And one of the hardest things was actually convincing them that I was an assist to their business, not a threat to their business.
Right. So you weren't just some rival coach, so
correct,
to speak.
Exactly. Yeah. I would never profess to be the skills coach as such. I coach ability. So you know, when I came back to South Africa in 2005, I mean, I literally spent 4 months in a car driving around Johannesburg and Pretoria and meeting all the coaches, and I met up with a couple who saw me as an asset to their business. And you know, I've always said my main focal point is on building an athlete's ability to play golf. It's up to the coach to teach them the technical skill. And I think it's always much easier to dump as much skill as you want on someone who has a lot of ability.
Right.
And if they don't have the ability to move and execute a certain skill, well, then it's very difficult to teach them that skill.
Now, some would say you don't need to be in great shape. If you look at some purists out there who still, I think, skip the gym a bit. What really essentially, I know this is a very broad question and you must get this a hell of a lot, but golf's about physical and both mental. But if you were to give, again, I mean, I feel bad asking this question because I know it's not an easy answer, but what essentially does make a champion though? Knowing that you know the various sides of things, you look at people and everyone that starts playing professional golf, the guys in the top amateur levels, they can all shoot 65.
Sure.
They've all got that physical ability, but what essentially makes them a champion?
Yeah, like you said, it's a tough question. I gave a talk on exactly this topic the other day. You know, when we look at the game of golf, and like any sport, there's always going to be the technical skill, the technical execution of the movement that you need to do in that sport, whether it's golf or tennis or cricket or whatever it is. There's the mental side to that. And then there's the physical side too. And we look at that sort of that trifecta of things that need to be in place. Golf has always been a bit of a nebulous one, though, because you know you'll see guys that are winning around the world, and they certainly don't have the physical prowess of Tiger Woods or Rory or one of those guys.
Sure.
But they can get by on sort of technical skill and mental fortitude, and they may well compete 1 week, and they'll win a PGA Tour event or a big event, but they will never be able to compete consistently. And you just need to look at the top 20, top 25 in the world now. They are all mentally strong, technically sound. And they're all athletes. They're all doing something in the gym and training to condition their bodies. And a lot of them are posting things all over Instagram to prove it too. So
yeah, it's become a fashionable thing now.
Yeah, so I think you know to be able to compete, you certainly need those three aspects. To become a champion, you know, there's really two things. I mean, you need to have a love of the game, and it doesn't matter what sport it is. You got to love what you do, because that is going to be your driving force to get you out onto the range, into the gym, and to do the right things to be able to compete week in, week out in a professional sport. And so the love gives you the ability to do the work that actually underpins your ability to perform.
Now, with all those factors, how difficult is it to assess someone? Say, for instance, I'm a young professional and you know, I've gone through the hard yards. Maybe I'm in line to get my Sunshine Tour card. How easy is it to assess what you're going to work on with somebody? Because they could be strong of mind. They could have physical capabilities. Is this like, do you have a detailed screening process before you get into the more technical things?
No, exactly, Ben. So I run a program through an institute called TPI. They're based in Carlsbad, California, and they are pretty much at the forefront of golf performance coaching and training. And they've actually been doing a lot of stuff in other sports now because their programs are so efficient, so effective, and actually produce results. So any student that comes to see me, first and foremost, I run them through our physical screen. And at the end of that, you will receive, there's a fitness handicap that you get. Now, I mean, obviously, we'd like you to be a low single figure, maybe if not a scratch in your physical screen. Anyone in the teens has got a bit of work to do, and anyone over 18 and close to 20, they're going to spend a lot of time with me in the gym and really working on their
body. Because it's a non-negotiable, essentially. You can't get to a point of excellence unless you've ticked that box.
100%. A consistency. You know, like, I mean, I've got guys who've won tournaments on the Sunshine Tour with a fitness handicap of 27. The thing is that they're not going to be able to perform week in, week out. And these guys often say to me, they say, you know, Garth, I can play a round of golf where for 9 holes, I just can't find the golf course. And then suddenly my swing comes back to me and I'm okay. Or vice versa. I start off like house on fire and suddenly I lose my swing. And I often have to say to them, look, you don't lose your swing. It's a motor engram. It's in your brain. It knows what it's trying to do. The problem is your hardware, your body, can't actually replicate what your brain is trying to tell it to do.
Exactly.
So, because your fitness handicap is so high. So if I can improve your hardware, then the software program that you have of your golf swing is just going to be able to run more smoothly and more consistently and more be more repeatable. So it is nice to have the fitness handicap. And I think it's nice when I run the TPR screen is that guys can then – there's a goal to shoot for, you know. And you know, there's a benchmark. There's a mark in the sand, right? Okay, this is where I am today. And we can build, you know, programming that can then fix the what I call the red flags or the real areas of concern. Clear those things out. And then you know, the fitness handicap comes down. And that's a real motivator for guys to keep doing their workouts and to come and see me in the gym and also do the stuff while they're on the road as well, which is always hard to sort of throw a towel down in your hotel room and make sure that you do your stretches and your recovery work. But
yeah,
that's a good motivator.
I mean, I always find like I've done pretty much all sports, and obviously through my blog and what I do in sport, I'm very curious. So I'll give everything a try, from contact sports to Pilates, yoga, whatever. I've pretty much tried it all, I think. But what I find interesting is that the more you work out in different ways, the more you understand your body. I don't think there's a better sport in the world where you need to understand your body, because the swing, like people are saying, losing the swing. People talk about feel a lot. But if you can understand your body, those things will be a whole lot easier.
100%. We call it kinesthetic awareness.
Yeah.
It's awareness of my body and space. And the better I can be at that, the quicker I can make changes to my swing, and so that I can actually, you know, I might have a day when I'm a little bit off, but because I've got an understanding of what my body's doing, I can feel the club and I can actually make, you know, my troubleshoots basically on the golf course to actually fix it and turn what would be a terrible round into something okay, and I can then go and work it on the range afterwards and come back tomorrow and hopefully shoot a low one. So, you know, that kinesthetic awareness and that sort of that body IQ, I think that's important. Yeah,
I'm glad you mean that. That body IQ, you hear more about it nowadays. Yeah. It's not people just throwing around because they've got nothing to say. It's just that it's become so integral to understanding what goes on. Yeah. Now, so you get into decent shape. Obviously, a mental component of this is quite important. Is that something that you, again, is it quite difficult to assess who needs more, who needs less of that kind of stuff?
Yes, absolutely. I think, you know, some people could do with it more than others, absolutely. You know, we look at we do sort of a game assessment from a technical perspective, from a physical perspective, and from a mental perspective too. And you know, we've got a number of different mental coaches that we will send students to, depending. And it's because they use different techniques. You know, some psychologists like to use very process orientated type stuff.
Okay.
Other mental coaches or psychologists like to be more, you know, get in your space, actually get to understand you more and have a cup of coffee and become your friend in a way, as almost like a confidant, a mentor type. So someone like Bob Rotella would be something like that. There's other psychologists that are more about the regimented, okay, well, this is what you got to do, A, B, C, your 3 C's, your 3 P's, that type of thing. So, you know, depending on the person, the individual student, what their personality type is, we will then refer them on to a mental coach that sort of fits in line with how they operate, their MO, you know, and so that there's no clash in the way that they do things.
With regards to technology, we all know that. I mean, if I look at what the smartphone has done for your average hacker, I mean, I can get Shot Tracer now. You know, I can get all kinds of things that can tell me things about the swing. How has technology changed what you've done, you know, as recently as, say, the last 10 years when working with clients?
It's unbelievable what technology has done and the rate at which it is moving. I mean, like you say, we just look at the iPhone and cell phone technology. It's incredible. You know, I was actually, Trevor Immelman has been playing back here, and I've got some old swings of his from when he won the Nedbank in 06, before he won his Masters. And I said to him, I'll send him the swings. And they were filmed with an old analog, you know, cassette tape type camera, and it's been a bit of a mission trying to convert those and get them sent off to him. So it just shows how quick it's changed. I mean, you know, golf pros nowadays or teaching professionals don't use cameras as such anymore. They use a phone because the technology is so good that, you know, they're just happy to use that. A lot of it is, the big change has been in data analysis. One of the big changes has been launch monitors. So things like TrackMan and FlightScope.
You see a lot of that on Instagram. All the pros almost like travel with a TrackMan now.
Absolutely, they do. And TrackMan really has revolutionized golf. In fact, it's changed the teaching manuals. I teach and lecture and assess the sports science module for the PGA of South Africa. And we've actually had to change some of the teaching models that were originally taught to golf teaching professionals. And what we understood, or what we thought we understood about how the ball flew through the air and what created ball flight and things like that, we realized we were wrong. Because now with the advent of launch monitors, we're actually able to see that in actual fact, the club face actually dictates 80% of how a ball flies through the air. And, the way that club face is entering into impact, the way it struck, where the ball strikes on the club face, can have a multitude of effects on the golf ball. So that's where TrackMan really has changed things a lot. From a coaching perspective, one of the best things about TrackMan in using launch monitors is it's actually taken the technical away from the coach. So I think a lot of guys see the numbers and they see the data and they think, oh my word, TrackMan is going to make me so technical. But in actual fact, it does the opposite. The TrackMan and the information you have on your tablet sitting there telling you what the club was doing and what the ball was doing when you made contact, well, that's the technical. It just makes you, as a coach, even more kinesthetic, more noetic in the way that we coach. It's a lot more feel orientated. So we might say to the guy, well, look, your number, you're a bit steep into impact. You want to try and shallow that out a little bit. So I want you to feel like you're doing this, and that's really has changed coaching in a way, which has been for the better for me. I think a lot of coaches were getting very technical sort of 10 years ago. But whereas now with the advent of technology, which has made it a lot more user-friendly, it's made coaching a lot more of an art again, mm-hmm. as opposed to a science. I think a lot of guys were getting very scientific, and it was all I remember I went to a coaching conference in 2008, and it was the sort of motto, or the, if it was a hashtag back then, we didn't have it back then, but it would have been, it's all about physics, because that's what everyone was talking about. And I certainly was, I had my red flag up there, because I thought, well, this is quite dangerous here. We're getting into more of a technical environment. But with the advent of the technology and the software and the interface that we now have, it's become a lot more user-friendly, which is actually making coaching back to an art again, which is quite exciting for me.
This all fascinates me. And I think, for the purpose of this interview, we're going to move on to other subjects, mm-hmm. but I could probably talk to you about this for like another hour or two. Phil Mickelson in an interview recently said, to be a good golfer, you've got to be either really clever or really dumb. So which made me kind of think, and I'm not going to sound mean or anything, but when I look at the best golfer right now, I look at Dustin Johnson.
Sure.
That guy hits the ball. I mean, you look at that swing and you look at how he goes through impact, mm. and you look at how he approaches things. Mm. And it's pretty simple. You then look at someone like Bryson DeChambeau, right? He was an amateur sensation. He's come onto the scene. He's trying to put side saddle. Yeah. He's got all kinds of things. You follow him on Instagram and his followers are even saying, dude, cut the technical crap now. Just make a cut.
100%. Yeah.
So you look where all of these things you've just mentioned, you can use in certain ways. With a guy like Dustin Johnson, he's obviously found his sweet spot in golf. He knows what he needs to do. He's had his own personal issues, but now you can just see that guy's in the zone. Sure. And it's great to see. Using information, all those different things, taking what he needs out of it. Look at a guy like Bryson DeChambeau. He's searching. He's trying things. And it must be so distracting. Like, as a coach and as someone who's in charge of a player's well-being and this kind of stuff, I mean, would he be your kind of worst nightmare as a student, so to speak, with a guy who's constantly thinking and tinkering?
Yes and no. I think, it's we have students like that, and it's often a case of trying to dumb it down for them because they can be over analytical.
I think he's gone past that six times.
So. You look at someone like Dustin Johnson, okay, so, that's the one extreme, okay? I call it the Herschel Gibbs syndrome. You're just too stupid to know what's going on.
It happens, and you keep making it happen.
And this is the whole thing. I mean, you look at, cricket coaches. I mean, some of the best batting coaches, you ask them what is their coaching technique, what is their mantra, they go, see ball, hit ball. Mm. And really that's what it comes down to. I mean, Dustin Johnson plays golf, see ball, hit ball, doesn't he? And that's how Herschel Gibbs used to bat. I mean, he'd get done with the Jaffa and he wasn't worried about whether his bat was straight or skew. And he was just thinking, okay, come, let's see what you got. Bowl the next one. I'm going to hit this one out of the ground. So, and I think we try and encourage our students to play golf that same way. It's obviously I'm quite technical, or I'm trying to work on my skill set when I'm practicing, but we play with a very different mindset. More of a a think box, play box type thing that we do. So someone like Bryson DeChambeau at the moment, look, I mean, he's struggling a bit as well, which is always going to make it harder because there's a lot of searching going on there.
And I guess he's new to the tour as well, so there's those pressures and exactly challenges too.
And there'd be lots of questions like guys like us talking about him right now. So, you know, I think that's where a good team around you is really important. To actually take and deflect and actually help maybe chew over some of the things that he's maybe thinking of working on and really sift through a lot of the crap basically that is out there. Yeah, I think it has a.
And you'd be so tempted to go into this kind of stuff because you've got, like you said, all this data is there now.
And you can get inundated with it and you can actually drown in it. So that's where the coach is important, that he takes that data, he looks at it, he can sift through it and decide, right, what is the pertinent stuff that we need to be working on, and then take that to the player. So, I mean, someone like Rafa Nadal is a really good example. I mean, Uncle Tony does that for him and does a great job. You know, nothing gets to Rafa unless it goes through Uncle Tony. And I think, I think the same thing happened with Dustin Johnson. I mean, nothing got to Dustin Johnson unless it went through Butch Harmon. And sort of Butch took that role on and has been, integral to Dustin Johnson's success now.
So with some of the pros that you work with, what's your approach sort of going into a tournament, and then what kind of stuff would tournament week essentially hold for you?
Well, it's such a good lead-in. I think, a lot of the stuff we're already working on is just play, and trying to get the guys into a good mindset of playing golf and not making golf swings, actually hitting golf shots. And that's it sounds the same, but it's fundamentally different.
Yeah.
And so from my perspective, from the fitness side, in the lead up to events, I'm always trying to get the guys physically ready. It's all about readiness and getting them ready to go. On the morning of an event, we do a warm-up. I always call it my quick and dirty warm-up. I'm looking at improving mobility in the ankle, in the hip, and in the thoracic spine. I'm looking at improving stability in the glutes and the core and in my scapula, my shoulder blades. And then the last thing I do is we look at some form of activation. So I want to activate the movement pattern that we see in the golf swing. So just some form of rotation, obviously. It is a rotary sport. Something where we're loading them into a squat or a deadlift type movement pattern. But I've always traveled with my medicine ball and my bag of Superflex bands, and we do warm-ups, and we, it gets quite active.
This is everything amateur golfer does not do.
Exactly right. No, I mean, and Ben, it's not half an hour. It's between 8 and 15 minutes. So depending on the student, some guys like a longer warm-up, some guys like a shorter one. And I've always got a foam roller, and I've always got my bands and my ball, and we run a warm-up every single day before we play. And I just think one of the big things is, I mean, one of my players once said to me, he said, Garth, the way I play, it just depends on how I feel on that first tee shot, like how my body's feeling. And he said it to me like it was a problem. And I said to him, well, don't you understand? That's actually a good thing, because we can control that.
Yeah.
Like, I can control how I eat. I can control how I sleep. I can control how I exercise, how I warm up, how I do all that sort of thing. If you said to me, it depends whether the wind's blowing in off the left, I mean, well, then we're dead in the water, because I can't control that. So the controllables are there, and I think a warm-up and being prepared from that side of things, nutrition and things like that, is they're all controllables, and they're things that I can influence. And if you have that as your anchor, I mean, you're setting yourself up for good performance every single time.
Yeah, geez, if I could approach every one of my rounds like that, I really enjoy golf. So who are some of the guys that you're currently working with in the pro level?
Well, and
or have in the last few years?
European Tour and Sunshine Tour, there's a lot of guys that play on both tours. I work with a guy named Jacques Blau, who's on the web.com tour now, over in the States. He's playing here as well. He did quite nicely this last week.
I once caddied for Jacques.
Did you?
It was his worst ever professional round.
I'm not surprised.
I remember it so clearly. It was in the winter tour when he had just come out of the amateur ranks.
Okay.
So he's gone a long way since then.
Fair enough. No, he's a lovely guy, Jacques. Yeah. I love spending time
with him. Terrific guy.
So Jacques is one of them. I work with Hayden Porteous. George Coetzee has been a client of mine for a while now, doing some really good stuff with him. And I think he's got some really, really good performances coming up soon. I work with Dean Burmester, which was great. We've only been working together for about a month now, and it was very nice to see him win last week. And he was very kind. He had some kind words for me, which is always encouraging. But I just really want to help guys, achieve their true potential, and Dean has certainly got a lot of that, and has got a very bright future ahead of him. I work with Dylan Fratelli and Eric Van Rooyen, two youngsters as well. And then a very talented youngster, Christian Bezuidenhout. He won Rookie of the Year this year.
Yes, one of the most amazing golf swings I've ever seen.
Yeah, it's fluid and flowing. And you know, his coach, Dougie Wood, who I work with, has done a great job there. And you know, we've been working with Christian since he was, 9 years old. He first started seeing Doug, and I picked him up when he was about 11, 12. So, you know, he's one of those that we're molding for the future. And I really think he has a very bright future ahead of him too. So, you know, I work with Ashley Simon and a couple of other girls on the ladies European tour and on the LPGA. So you know, there's a lot of folks, obviously others that I haven't mentioned, but you know, it's exciting to work with the pros. I enjoy that moment, that time. You know, standing at, you know, on a major at a major event, you know, on the practice range, and you know, there's a very high pressure situation that. And I always say that the difference between making and not is very small. The problem is there's so much crap in that small space that creates a lot of high pressure. And some people enjoy that and enjoy that moment, and I certainly do. Some people don't, but yeah.
It's such a great cross-section of players that you're working with there. You look at a guy like Hayden Portis, obviously he's gone from winning Joburg Open to having some swing issues that he's looking to go through. We've got a guy like George Coetzee, maybe in your more traditional build as a golfer. Sure, and then you got Dean...
Build for comfort.
And then you got Dean Burmester, who absolutely murders the ball off the tee. Yeah. Do you often find sometimes that you'll be working with someone... I mean, if you look at those three players, there's three different golf games, so to speak. Do you often find sometimes that you'll be working with someone, say, like Dean... You'll learn something like that maybe the Hayden could pick up on, and vice versa.
Yes, and often to the duress of some of our players, they're like, "Don't tell them that I'm doing this." So, you know, it's all about the competitive edge. Yeah, definitely. I mean, a lot of the way that guys go about things, particularly enjoy working with some of the guys who've been on tour for a while, and you can certainly glean a lot from what they do, and hopefully sort of feed that into some of the youngsters, so that they don't have to make the same mistakes to learn. They can learn from others. You know, So you know. I certainly enjoy working with George Coetzee. He's one of those guys that is highly intelligent, and maybe a little over analytical at times, but he's always got a good reason for why we're doing things, and he doesn't question me, but he'll want to know why we're doing what we're doing and what effect this is going to have on the swing.
Right.
And that's something that he puts emphasis into. You know, he wants to know, is this going to help my golf? Yes or no. You know, George is, funny enough, I mean, his fitness handicap is 5.5. So from a golf fitness perspective, he's actually extremely fit.
Yeah, he's got flexibility,
stability,
body awareness,
and he's got a lot of power, you know, and that's key. Yes, of course, he might not look like, you know, Jordan Spieth or one of those guys, but you know, this is the way George is. And if I had to change everything with him, he may well lose his golf game.
Exactly.
Which really at the bottom line is why he's coming to see me. He wants to play better golf, not necessarily make the front cover of GQ magazine. I mean, not with that face, but anyway. But you know, so you know, George is he understands that really at the end of the day, it's about playing better golf so that he can execute, you know, his sport and you know, perform on a regular basis. So you know, now I look at a guy like Hayden and Dean, both, you know, athletes as such, both hit the ball a country mile, and with them it's more about controlling other variables that allow them to arrive at the golf course, you know, in that state of readiness. So that a lot of that stuff I've been working on with those two.
In a perfect scenario, what would be the sort of, it's so difficult again because it's a very personal game, golf, but what would be the perfect age to come to someone like you if your intention is worldwide phenomenal performances and prime
world domination,
pride, glory, victories, everything else, professional golf?
Yeah, I mean, we've got programs that we run at our academy, and it is a passion of mine. I've got two sons, and they love their golf, and our junior programs I'm very proud of. We've got our Big Five golf program, and it's all about starting with physical literacy. So I'll break that down. There's two things that make a child physically literate. There's fundamental movement skills, and then fundamental sports skills. So fundamental movement skills would be things like running, jumping, hopping, throwing, catching, and things like that. So if you don't have a fundamental movement skill, well, then we can't then teach you the fundamental sports skill on top of that. So let's take cricket, for example. So if you can't catch, you can't play cricket.
Yeah.
You can't play baseball, you can't play netball, you can't play a multitude of sports that require catching. That's my fundamental movement skill. So we work on the movement skills first, and then the sports skill of that specific sport thereafter. So in golf, it would be chipping, hitting, putting, that type of thing. And we use a lot of the movement skill education in the skills education too. So that's sort of from the age of about 5 or 6 up to about 12. The thing between the ages of 9 and 12, every child has what's called a speed window. And in our development process, that long-term athletic development, between the ages of 9 and 12, obviously it varies with boys and girls and can go up and down. But that's the age at which we develop speed. So we do a lot of stuff with kids of that age to develop speed. We really don't care where the ball goes, just hit it as hard as you can.
Yeah.
And we've got other, we use a lot of other little tools and implements and you know, we use clubs and rackets, things from other sports where you can help generate that type of speed. So I think that's important window not to miss. But from early specialization is a real problem in this day and age in sports. I mean, I've had parents arrive with their son, the kid's 9 years old, and dad has got, you know, Tiger Woods How I Play Golf under one arm and Hogan's Five Fundamentals under the other, and is telling me that his kid is going to be the next big thing. So, and at that age, I'm afraid it's far too young. I tend to like to really get kids to specialize into golf at the age of about 14, 15. I think, you know, when the body's changing and you're playing an asymmetrical sport with that much load, that repetitively, there's a multitude of injuries that are going to occur. The kid is going to experience some form of burnout at some point and will probably fall out of love with the game before they reach 20 and really are at their peak. So I tend to say if someone really wants to my son is ready to play golf, and it must be the kid's decision, it must be the child's decision that this is what I want to do, I want to specialize in golf or any sport for that matter. I say around the ages of 14 and 15, then it's the time to then say, okay, well, now we'll stop playing the team sports and things like that, and let's just focus on one specific discipline.
So before I get into my next question, which is linked to this, would you say then, I mean, I believe Tiger's got too much mileage on the clock. He just burnt out because, I mean, for the age of three, golf was something he was doing a lot of.
100%.
So, I mean, it'd be a fair thing that there's only so much your body can retake, mentally and physically.
Yeah, I mean, and Tiger's done a lot to his body as well. So, I mean, he has trained like a bit of a meathead, to be honest. I mean, he did come from the old school type mindset of training, a lot more sort of bodybuilding, heavy lifting. You know, one of the things that really caused his multitude of injuries and his knee and certainly his back was his obsession with the military. And, you know, his father, and it was his father. I mean, his father passed away.
Sure.
And his father was big into the military. And Tiger sought solace in two things. Obviously, the one we know all about. The other one was training. And,
exactly.
And training with the gym. And he joined Navy SEALs. He joined the Navy SEALs in Southern California and went through Navy SEAL basic training. And I mean, if anyone who knows anything about the military, the purpose of Navy SEAL basic is to break you. Let's push you until you break, because we want to see where your breaking point is, and then we know whether we can push you any further. So, and this was the problem. He was doing meathead type bodybuilding type training, overloading his body, and eventually he broke because that was the nature of what he was doing. So, you know, I think, you know, one of the things in this day and age is that there's a lot of knowledge out there and a lot of expertise, and when it's used well and you get people on your team who can support you with good sound programming and knowledge and coaching and teaching, you know, we can certainly avoid, you know, catastrophes like that.
Sure. To the other side of the spectrum, okay, I'm 35 currently. I started playing golf when I was 14. I then discovered girls and booze around 17, took a massive break, and then I've been playing literally like here and there ever since. I'm a 4 handicap now. I love golf. Mentally, I'll always want to go to the golf course. I've got a real desire to play. You know, I work in sport. It's my favorite thing. What would it take? Again, it's a difficult question, but in the next 2 years, if I were to dedicate, say, I don't know, 3 days a week of being proper and focused in my training, would you be able to say, like, again, you have to understand how I hit the ball and that kind of stuff. But like, my initial goal is to win my club championships, right?
Okay.
But again, it's consistency, getting to a point where you know you can break par, that kind of stuff. With all the technology we've got, and if you've got time on your side, I mean, is this something that could be really attainable in a short space of time, like say 2 years?
The short answer, yes. Absolutely it is. But obviously it does take time and dedication and hard work.
So, if you had, I mean, again, anyone can dedicate time to something, and anyone can try.
Yeah.
Those are two things that you can do for free.
Absolutely.
But if you're saying there's enough focused stuff out there and there's enough ways of assessing a golfer that you can really pinpoint things and work really, really hard at something, that the results can come that quickly.
Yes, I agree. Definitely there are. And I think, you know, like I said, when we do a full game assessment of every student that comes to see us, and we may find a leakage in your game somewhere, whether it is your physical, you know, flexibility and mobility, or whether it's your ability to putt. Okay, we will say, right, okay, well, these are the key areas that you are deficient in. If we improve those, we can make a massive effect on your ability to play this game. So, you know, I always say to you guys, you look at the in our trifecta of things, mental, physical, and technical, you know, we don't really have 100% control over the technical, because you can make a perfect swing and hit the ball on a perfect line with a perfect flight, and it might still go in the water because a gust of wind might pick up and blow it. So there's no guarantees from a technical perspective. Mentally, you know, we also try and be mentally strong and things, but again, we don't have complete control over it because, you know, there's mental things happen. I might be paired with somebody that I don't like, or something happens out on the golf course and I don't respond well to it. Something like, oh, I had a fight with my girlfriend the night before, or whatever it might be. So we don't have 100% control over that either. I always say that for me, from a physical perspective, we do. I've got 100% control over my physical. So, you know, 33.3% of my golf game, I have 100% control over. And the people who come to see me, and I run them through a screen, and I'll say to them, look, your fitness handicap is 19. Okay, so I always ask them, like, out of the 33.3%, how much do you think you're really using? And they might say, well, 10. I say, well, if I said to you, in the next 6 months, I can give you another 20% on your golf game, would that excite you? And think how much better you could be. And that, I think that kind of puts it into perspective about where you should invest your time. You know, I might assess someone and they might be a 4 handicap on my physical screen. I'm going to say to them, don't come and see me. It's whatever you're doing, you're fine. You need to work on, you know, you need to see the coach, and they need to improve your golf swing or your putting or your bunker play. Or, you know, you're a great player. You play off a +2 or even like a low handicap 2 or 3. And very invariably, it comes down to a mental thing, like your approach to how you play the game and your reaction, your response to adversity. Because let's be honest, that's what golf is. It's a game of overcoming adversity. And I love this quote. There's a guy named Alistair Cook, a journalist, well-known journalist in the sort of 80s and 90s. And he wrote, he said, golf is a game that was created by our creator as an atonement for our sins. And I love that because, and it is.
I've had days that make sense. Yeah.
And that's the thing. And it's how well you respond to that, because we've all experienced that. Just like you said, everyone from Tiger Woods to a rank flat out 36 handicapper, you know, golf can be maddening all as well as, you know, enjoyable all at the same time. And it's how well we respond to those maddening situations. And so often, you know, we see kids and you know, senior adults who, like you said, want to play their club champs, and their golf game is there. You know, they just don't deal well with the things that happen to them out on the golf course. So it may well be a mental thing.
And it's also understanding all these things. So if something goes wrong, you know exactly what it is that's gone wrong why it's gone wrong.
And that's,
I mean, it's the adaptation as well.
Correct.
I mean, you see it with great rugby players, cricketers, footballers, whatever. It's adapting to these things. Mm. Well, Garth, the time has absolutely flown. Just finally, if you are looking to improve your game, so whether it be from my perspective or professional, whatever, how can people get hold of you? Where can people find out more about your way? And obviously get in touch.
Yeah, well, you can get hold of me on at our website, www.wannabeachampion.com. You can follow me on Twitter, Smiley Milne, or on our Wannabe a Champion handles, Wannabe a Champ. Anything that's from a if you really want to upskill your knowledge base, I'd say go to the TPR website, which is mytpr.com. And they've got a multitude of stuff on there, from articles to, you know, videos to exercises to all sorts of stuff on you know, golf skill and golf performance and golf training, golf coaching. And they've got certifications there as well that you can do. If you really want to do what I do and maybe work with golfers, and if they may will be your passion going down the line, then if there's someone who would be interested in that, then look at the TPR certifications. It applies to whether you're a golf coach, a mental coach, a fitness coach, a medical professional. They've got streams for all those different vocations, and it really is quite an exciting industry. I love what I do. Like I said, my passion is my occupation, and I'm very fortunate to do what I love, and I don't work a day in my life. So I'm truly blessed to do what I do, and I get to spend time with some truly remarkable people.
I'm just so curious what my physical golf handicap would be. I'm thinking about this. Like,
well, let's get you down. Let's get it tested.
Yeah, that's interesting. God, thank you so much for your time. That was fascinating. Like I said, I could probably have you back at some stage, maybe when we're into the major season, and just like dissect what makes people so great. Because
awesome.
I love reading the books. I listen to whatever podcast I can find about golf, because I think this whole thing about what makes a champion is one of the most fascinating things in all of sport. And the more info I can find out about it, this is what really drives me. Thanks so much. That's it for this week on The Bounce Show. Next week, we're going to have a rugby guest. I know I promised this to you about 2 weeks ago, but we're really going to do it. Super Rugby's nice and into things now. I hope everything's going well for you in the Super Brew pool. So next week, look forward to a rugby guest. There's some really great guys out there. Of course, social media brings it all together, just like it does right here on this podcast. Thanks for joining us this week. If you're listening live, you can catch the whole podcast on thebounce.co.za or go onto cliffcentral.com and look for the Bounce page right there. Cool. Catch you back next week. cliffcentral.com